chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya beforehand, or we just do Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda? Huh? We don't do the Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, huh? Okay. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Okay, we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjhalila, chapter 22. Chapter 22 is entitled The Process of Devotional Service. And today we'll cover text 26. 27 and 28 are connected, so I probably should do those as well, just as they follow up on what's being presented in 26. And then there will be some cohesiveness for the next week. Dr. Mark, do you usually do the board?
Yeah? No, I did it yesterday.
You did it, you were deputized at the last minute. So someone can make note that we start on 29 next week. Charivanashrami.
Charivanashrami.
Yadi.
Yadi.
Krishna.
Krishna.
Nahi.
Nahi.
Bhaje.
Bhaje.
Swakarma karite.
Swakarma karite.
Se.
Se.
Rorave.
Rorave.
Adi.
Adi.
Maje.
Maje.
Charivanashrami adi.
Charivanashrami adi.
Krishna nahi. Wait a minute. Can we start over again? I paused and then you.
Oh, you've got it split up. And, oh,
okay. All right. Okay. Got it. All right. So I'll try to adjust here. Charivanashrami adi.
Charivanashrami adi.
Krishna nahi bhaje.
Krishna nahi bhaje.
So parama karite se.
Parama karite se.
Rovrave padimaje.
Rovrave padimaje.
Charivanashrami adi.
Charivanashrami adi.
Krishna nahi bhaje.
Krishna nahi bhaje.
Swakarma karate se.
Swakarma karate se.
Rorave padimaje.
Rorave padimaje.
Charivanashrami adi.
Charivanashrami adi.
Krishna nahi bhaje.
Krishna nahi bhaje.
Swakarma karate se.
Swakarma karate se.
Rorave padimaje.
Rorave padimaje.
Please chant.
Charivanashrami adi.
Charivanashrami adi.
Krishna nahi bhaje.
Krishna nahi bhaje.
Swakarma karite se.
Swakarma karite se.
Rorave padimaje.
Rorave padimaje.
Charivanashrami adi.
Charivanashrami adi.
Krishna nahi bhaje.
Krishna nahi bhaje.
passages. Charivarna Shrami.
Charivarna Shrami.
Followers of the four social and spiritual orders of life. Yadi. If. Krishna. Lord Krishna. Nahi. Not. Bhaje. Serve. Sokarma Karite. Performing his duty in life. Say,
that person.
Ro-rave,
in a hellish condition.
Padi, falling down.
Maje,
becomes immersed.
Immersed.
Translation and purport by Savangrace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The followers of the Vanashram institution accept the regulative principles of the four social orders, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and four spiritual orders, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprast, and Sannyas. However, if one carries out the regulative principles of these three orders but does not render transcendental service to Krishna, he falls into the hellish condition of material life. Purport. One may be a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, or one may perfectly follow the spiritual principles of Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprast, and Sannyas, but ultimately, one falls down into a hellish condition unless one becomes a devotee. Without developing one's dormant Krishna consciousness, one cannot be factually elevated. The regulative principles of Vanashram Dharma in themselves are insufficient for attainment of the highest perfection. That is confirmed in the following two quotations from Srimad Bhagavatam, which I will read now. I'll just do the translations for both. From the mouth of Brahma, the Brahminical order has come into existence. Similarly, from his arms, the Kshatriyas have come. From his waist, the Vaishyas have come. And from his legs, the Shudras have come. These four orders and their spiritual counterparts, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas, combine to make human society complete. If one simply maintains an official position in the four varnas and ashramas, but does not worship the Supreme Lord Vishnu, he falls down from his puffed up position into a hellish condition. Okay, I'll read the first translation again. The followers of the Vanashram institution accept the regulative principles of the four social orders, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and four spiritual orders, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. However, if one carries out the regulative principles of these orders but does not render transcendental service to Krishna, he falls into the hellish condition of material life. Om Gana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Umlitam Gana Tashmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I once heard a relevant pastime of Srila Prabhupada from Giriraj Swami. In a 1992 Nectar of Devotion course in the VIHE in Vrindavan. And Giriraj told of how Prabhupada went with some of his disciples to a pious man's house with his pious family for prasadam. And the family very nicely served Prabhupada and his disciples prasadam. And everything was very pukka. The prasadam was very tasty, well prepared. It's simple, but nicely prepared. And then after the devotees, Prabhupada and his disciples had finished taking prasadam, they went into the other room while the family that had hosted them honored prasadam. And while the family was in the other room taking prasadam and Prabhupada was with his disciples, he said that even if one very perfectly executes his responsibilities as a grihastha very perfectly, if he forgets Krishna, he goes to hell. So Giriraj Swami described how he was very much struck by this comment. It seemed a little extreme to himself and the other devotees. But then later, he came across this in his reading. However, if one carries out the regulative principles of these orders but does not render transcendental service to Krishna, he falls into the hellish condition of material life. But I thought that Vanashram was kind of the safety net to prevent us from falling into the hellish condition. So it requires a little bit more in-depth examination to understand, well, what's the point here? We have Daneshwar Prabhu is an advocate of the establishment of Varnashram. So he's giving a class to Russian devotees via Skype now. So it would be really good if he were here to give me support on this. I'm not a world-recognized expert in Varnashram, but nevertheless, I'll try my best. This concept of remembering Krishna is focused on in the second chapter, the Nectar Devotion, where Prabhupada is giving a summary study of Rupa Goswami's presentation of, and that chapter, Nectar Devotion is entitled The First Stages of Devotion. So Rupa Goswami is presenting sadhana bhakti. And there's two kinds of sadhana bhakti, but first of all, this whole concept of sadhana bhakti. Would anyone like to volunteer a succinct definition of sadhana bhakti? Don't all raise your hands at once. Yes, Mataji. Okay, say it nice and loud one more time.
Regulated devotional service in the practice state.
Okay, that's I'd give you like about maybe 75% on that one. There's some elements that are significant that should be included. Anybody else? Okay. Yes, back to Mark.
Executing devotional studies with faith.
Okay. I'm sorry?
According to the regular principles with faith.
Following the regular principles with faith. Regular principles of devotional service with faith. Okay. Shamananda Prabhu.
Procedures of engaging our senses.
You have to remember that I'm a really old man, and so you have to talk extra loud because I can't hear so well. Okay. That point about the senses is significant. Anything else? There's one other element that needs to be included. Yes, Manohar Prabhu.
I don't know, I'm not learned yet, but...
You realized.
Whatever I speak about sadhana, to me, it is unlike raghunatha bhakti, something that you do because you understand that this is good, and you just, you don't feel it yet.
Okay. So sadhana bhakti has two divisions. One of them is vaidhi sadhana bhakti and one of them is raganuga bhakti. And that's what you're describing. Vaidhi sadhana bhakti is sadhana bhakti that's done prior to the awakening of a spontaneous attraction to serving Krishna through devotional service. So it's done in pursuance of shastric injunctions and under the order of the spiritual master. Okay, raganuga bhakti, there's a spontaneous attraction, or there's a, you know, kind of a sneak preview of love of God. And so we don't have to be told to do it. There's so much taste that we do it spontaneously. That's raganuga bhakti. Right. So those are two subcategories of sadhana bhakti. And I'm still waiting for one important element of the definition of sadhana bhakti. Yes, Prabhu.
Well, this is just
you're a Bhakti Shastri graduate, so I'm counting on you.
Well, I only thought about hearing the Vedic scriptures from the alternative sources. That's what I thought about.
Okay. All right. That's required, you know, in order to understand the process of sadhana bhakti, certainly, and to apply it, because there's very many details given on how to practice it. I'm still waiting for one element. We got devotional service. Devotional service involves engaging the senses in the service of the Lord. And there's an example given of a child. I'll have, maybe someone can give it for me. It's about learning to walk. What's that? Yes?
It's like when a baby is born, a potential.
Right.
It can walk, but it has to be brought up.
And so that's done by practice. When I was a little boy learning how to walk, my brother used to follow around behind me, and I'd take a few steps and he'd push me over. So he made it a little difficult. So that's the way it is with devotional service sometimes. You know, we get challenged by Maya, we get pushed over. So, but there's, so that dormant characteristic is there in the heart, that dormant potentiality is there. So it's awakened. So the definition that I was looking for, the kind of with all the elements, is it's engaging the senses in the service of the Lord. And by doing that, we awaken love of God, right? So the baby, he starts taking a few steps, and then eventually those steps allow him to walk normally. So Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhu Kabunaya Shravanadi Shuddha Chitta Karaye Udaya. Pure love for Krishna is eternally established in Madhu Gopal's heart, and Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu's heart, and Shyamananda Prabhu's heart. It's in the heart of every living entity. And when one Shravanadi Shuddha Chitta, when one engages in hearing and chanting, then that pure love awakens. It comes out, gets uncovered, you know, just covered over by different layers of lust and conditioning. Okay, so we all clear now? We're talking about sadhana bhakti. So then Rupa Goswami, in his presentation on sadhana bhakti, quotes a very significant verse, which is very relevant to today's discussion, from Padma Purana. Smarta vyasaratam vishnur vishmartavyo najatu chit sarve vidhi nishedashur hidayor eva kinkura. So all the, let's see. One should always remember Krishna and never forget him. And of all the rules and all the other rules and regulations coming from the Vedas are simply servants of these two principles. So always remember Krishna and never forget him. And all the rules and regulations, all the do's, the pravrittis, and all the don'ts, the nivrittis, they're simply servants of these two principles. Okay, can someone kindly explain what it means to be servants? You know, all these other rules and regulations are simply servants of these two principles. What does that mean? I'm just trying to keep everybody awake here.
They should act in that light.
They should.
The purpose should always be those two things.
Okay. That's good. And indeed, you know, if performed with that consciousness, then that's actually what will take place. Right? If our activities that we are engaged in during the day, if we understand that they're to help us remember Krishna and we do it with that in mind, then kind of, it's a self-fulfilling function. So, and so these two principles of always remembering Krishna and never forgetting him, if we're always remembering Krishna, then we're actually fulfilling the purpose of all the different pravrittis, things that we should do, you know, within sadhana bhakti, actually automatically achieved. And if we never forget Krishna, then automatically have accomplished everything that we shouldn't do. Right? So, does that make sense? Okay, so, I mean, all the privities are automatically achieved if we always remember Krishna. And all of the privities are designed to allow us to remember Krishna. And all of the nivrittis, things that we shouldn't do, are automatically achieved if we never forget Krishna. Does that all make sense? Okay, so then, let us say that I'm in a conditioned state. I'm practicing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. It's not natural for me to always remember Krishna. And a lot of times, I forget Krishna. Does that mean I'm going to go to hell? Are you sure? Okay, let me read today's verse. Okay. No, let me read, it's very succinct, the last one. If one simply maintains an official position in the four varnas and ashrams, but does not worship the Supreme Lord Vishnu, he falls down from his puffed up position into a hellish condition. Okay. I mean, if you
But does not worship, doesn't one, if one's worshiping Lord Vishnu, doesn't he have to be remembering him? I mean, pretty hard to worship someone if you don't even remember him, right? Okay, so if we don't remember, so if we're executing our responsibilities, but we don't remember the person that we're supposed to be worshiping by doing it, doesn't it mean we're going to fall down into a hellish condition if we don't remember him? I'm hoping everyone will internalize this, you know, by the end of the class. And yes, Jadarani.
It seems like hellish condition doesn't mean you're in hell, but the hellish condition means your experience. I mean, your experience is quite hellish if you do things without doing meditation.
Okay, can you repeat everything you just said, but, you know, like two notches louder, so that the old men here can hear? Okay. We also, historically speaking, you've been in the movement a long time, and you've observed that there are some personalities that take to the process of devotional service, and then they discontinue, and maybe they fall into a hellish condition. Right? They become overcome by the material energy and maybe engage in sinful activities. And so what is it that prevents that from happening? Now, we may be in a, you know, like in the beginning stages of devotional service, we may be executing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, which just by our experience as practicing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhaktas, we realize that it's uncommon for us to remember Krishna always. So what is it that prevents us from falling into hellish condition? Okay, can I let you all off the hook and give you some very interesting insight that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives in his commentary on this verse from Padma Purana? Smartavya Siddhatam Vishnor Vishmartavyo Najatuchit Sarve Vidhi Nasheda Shur Etayor Eva Kinkura. You ready? Should I do it? Or does anybody, like, just their brains bursting with realization and they want to speak about, you know, how we can avoid falling into a hellish condition? Okay, so what Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says is that in a conditioned state, we can't remember Krishna all the time. So the point that he makes is that he offers the concession that at least once a day we should remember Krishna. At least once a day. And the purpose behind our activities should ultimately, you know, we should have this clear understanding that it's meant to please Krishna. And then this is our prophylactic against falling into hellish condition, that we have this purpose in mind. But when we get in the middle, like, who here has a job, outside job? Prabhu, you're working outside. You're also working outside. Okay, do you work in an office? Okay, now tell the truth. In the course of the day, do you, in every activity that you're engaged in, do you always remember Krishna?
Well, maybe, I mean, it's very hard when you're just doing your job.
Yeah, your boss tells you to do this, and then you get a phone call from somebody, you know, with some...
But maybe there are different ways of remembering.
Okay, but the point is, it's quite difficult, you know. I mean, I don't have an outside job, I have an inside job, and I have to admit that many times in a day, I'm not remembering Krishna. I'm just doing my duty. You know, I'm turning on the computer and sending an email to this person and that person and calling up my
sons in Florida so they don't fall completely in my, and, you know, different things that I do, but a lot of times there's not, you know, I'm not thinking of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, you know, and how beautifully Gopinath was dressed this morning and how, you know, he's playing on his flute. And, you know, I mean, it's just, I'm not there yet. So, but still in all, the prophylactic is Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that at least once a day we should remember Krishna. This is kind of the requirement on the Vaidhi Sadhana platform, at least once a day. So what's a good way to, you know, dot our I's and cross our T's in that regard? Yes, Prabhu?
Well, I'm going to just do your work for Krishna, right? When I do my work at the end of the day, I always sacrifice it to Vishnu or to Krishna, but while you're doing it, you can also know that you're already doing it for him,
right,
for yourself.
Okay. All right. Any other suggestions on how to fulfill our minimum daily requirement of at least once a day? Okay. Mataji's holding up her japa beads. Okay, that's good. You know, the Devanashram system is described by Srila Prabhupada in different places as material. Okay, it's a material support so that we have adequately peace of subtle body, and you know, it's so that it kind of supports our Krishna consciousness, but in and of itself, it's not, you know, not included in the angas of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. You know, there's 64 angas, and Vanashram is not included in it. You know, your working is not included as an anga. So another way of looking at it is this daily minimum requirement. You know, Prabhupada, he put, now, please forgive me if sort of sounding like a fanatic, but he put a lot of angas into his morning program. You know, so this is something that he saw as an essential ingredient in this remembrance. You know, he really stressed it. I remember, you know, what it was like in America in the late 70s. There were temple presidents, you know, that would, when the conch would be sounded at Mangal Arati, they would lock the temple room door. And anybody that wasn't in the temple room, you know, prior to locking the door, they had to fast. One temple president had them fast all day. Another temple president said they had to miss breakfast. So there was a very high level, and you know, when I was a Sankirtan devotee in the New York temple, this is the service I took up fairly soon into my devotional career, the Sankirtan leader placed, it was kind of like a guard at the door during the japa period, and you couldn't leave the temple room. You know, you had to chant your japa in the temple room. Now, it sounds a little coercive, but actually I remember how amazing it was. There were these airbrush paintings of Krishna's pastimes on the walls of, and they were extremely well done, of the 55th Street Temple Room, 55th Street New York Temple Room, where I joined. And I remember, you know, chanting japa, going around the temple room with devotees like Vaisheshika. I'd chant my brother's side, or Pragosh. These are very empowered book distributors. And, you know, just the airbrush paintings, they were life-size. They would start coming alive for me as I was walking around the temple room. It was like incredibly surcharged, the atmosphere. And it wasn't, in those days, it wasn't something that people resented if they were pushed to do it. It was something that we just kind of saw as you know, like the minimum daily requirement, you know, to stay strong and stay enlivened in Krishna consciousness. So, I'm getting my picture taken here. I hope you don't use it to throw darts at later on in the day. Okay. So, you know, this aspect of our overall Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada put an extremely high level of prioritization in, you know, his preaching and in his practical implementation of ISKCON standards throughout the world. And he saw this, as a matter of fact, I remember when I became a temple president and I started looking at all the letters he wrote about temple management and about GBC responsibilities, that the foremost, he indicated in letter after letter that the foremost responsibility, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but the foremost responsibility of the GBC is to ensure that everyone attends the morning programs and that they're engaged in practical service in the day. So this was kind of the mood, and I saw, you know, I even as a neophyte and continuing to be a neophyte, I saw the tremendous advantage of a strong morning program in terms of dealing with the material energy through the rest of the day. And there's one example that I have. It was kind of like a milestone in my own devotional career. I was about a year and a half into the movement. Let's see. I'm looking at the clock here. I got 6 minutes before I turn into a pumpkin. So I'll tell this story real quickly, and then we'll stop for questions and answers. I was about a year and a half since I joined. I was on traveling Sankirtan, and there were four vans that would link up to a motorhome, you know, a house on wheels with the motor in it. And we would have our morning program in this motorhome. There was a senior Prabhupada disciple that was in charge of the overall party. So there were about three devotees per van, and we would sleep in the van, and then we'd come into the motorhome for, we'd have bucket showers outside. It was very simple and austere life. And then we'd come into the morning, to the motorhome for Mangal Arati, and we'd chant japa together, as someone would be cooking the morning prasadam, and then we'd have Bhagavatam class. So one night, Ramapad Das Brahmachari, who's now Ramapad Swami, Jai Sisi Radhagopina, Sri Jagannath, Sri Baladev, Sri Mati Subhadra, Sri Gornitai. Ramapad Das Brahmachari came out to join the traveling party. He stayed overnight, and he participated in Mangal Arati. I think he led Mangal Arati. And then he participated in a japa period with us. And then he gave the Bhagavatam class. And while giving the Bhagavatam class, the verse and purport prompted a discussion on the potency of chanting Hare Krishna. And so he started observing that different, you know, while during the japa period, he made comments in the class that he observed different types of inattentive japa. And he described dive bomber japa, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and radar japa, you know, where like the new devotees were looking at the cook and, you know, obviously not paying so much attention to their rounds. And anyway, you know, I walked out of the class and I realized, gosh, you know, I'm not chanting good japa. And I, somehow or other, I was inspired to really give it everything I had the next morning. Because my japa was all done, my spaced out japa was all done, you know, for that day. And, you know, I went out and book distribution after the class and got slaughtered by the material energy, and you know, I think I got arrested by the police, you know, and, you know, it's just like a usual heavy day with the material energy. So the next morning when I got up, in those days, every single Sankirtan devotee in the New York temple, there were about 45 brahmacharis. They had to be up by 2 a.m. Okay, that was the requirement. Now, Chaturani just rolled her eyes up into her head, thinking, my God, what an extreme standard. It was extremely blissful. That was my experience with it. So I got up at 2. I dug my mental heels in and was determined to just hear every single mantra. I just was super enthusiastic, super determined. And so then, when I got out on Sankirtan that day, my God, it was like amazing. Every single person that I met was like the best person I would meet in an entire month. And I would give them a book, start talking to them about it, and even before I'd ask for a donation, they'd reach for their wallet, you know, and hand the money over. You know, it's like incredible. So I realized, boy, this is like an amazing discovery. So the next day, I did the same thing. You know, I chanted super intense. I just wouldn't let my mind go, you know, off into its usual, like, Maya patterns of just thinking about everything, and what I got to do in a day, and this and that. I did, like, super intense, super loud. You know, no one could probably be anywhere near me because I was chanting so loud. But, and then the same thing happened. You know, actually, the first day I did 3 times what I would normally do on book distribution. Second day, I did, same thing happened. You know, so I could understand that if I put as much energy as possible into my sadhana practices, then Krishna would make all these arrangements. He would send these incredibly nice people for me to meet in the day. And, you know, anyway. Okay, so I've used up my quota of time here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
I would like to say that falling into hellish conditions, once you're practicing Krishna consciousness, it can help you to remember Krishna, because you know that.
It's
not what I want to do, you know?
It's a good kick in the backside,
yeah.
Right?
Because it sounds like, oh, hell, but we know about Krishna, I think. So it's also a blessing from Krishna.
Yeah. So there's other ways to advance in Krishna consciousness, though, rather than getting kicked from the backside. You know, we can be pulled ahead by a higher taste, and that's what comes when we're very serious about our sadhana practices. We can do it either way, and either way ultimately works. It works faster if we, you know, follow the strict sadhana route. Anything else? Yes, back to Mark Prabhu.
Did you always have this experience of intensely focused japa in the morning and going on book distribution?
Well, it was easier with book distribution because there was I knew that if I didn't do it, then I'd get really good results. If I didn't, and that was my service, you know. If I didn't do it, then I would get really slaughtered. So it was much easier. When I entered the management realm, because Rita Chaitanya Prabhu can tell you all about it, things get so heavy. Some of the issues you got to deal with are just so mind-boggling, you know, that sometimes it's hard to be as attentive, you know. And one can kind of go on, even though he's not attentive, and still do the service, and the results aren't so directly, it's not so perceivable how they're so directly connected, but long term, they are. We see Rita Chaitanya's, like, you know, like lines on a stone in terms of his morning program attendance, and hey, to be a temple president for 27 years is not an ordinary thing. You know, as a matter of fact, he might be in the Guinness World Book of Records for the longest temple presidency tenure. I think he might be, as a matter of fact, in one temple. I know, like, Savas, you know, he's a long time, but he wasn't always in L.A. And, you know, Badrinarayan, but I don't think he's temple president anymore. He was temple president for a long time in San Diego and Detroit. But I think he's, you know, right up there, one of the leaders in that regard. So the point is this, you know, my observation over the years is that those that somehow or other have become very strict with their sadhana practices, they're able, much more capable of passing Maya's tests. You know, and when Maya does kick us in the backside, we're ready for it, you know, because the tests come. Everyone gets them. And there's an interesting, you know, you see, the capacity for us to see Krishna orchestrating the test is increased dependent upon the degree of our commitment to sadhana. I'll give you an example. There, am I okay? Should there's a cane that I set, an invisible cane that's about to go around my neck and pull me off of the Vyasasan. Is it okay? I just don't want to get in trouble with the GBC temple presidents and, you know, go to hell for that reason, you know. There's, in the 1996 centennial, the International Centennial Committee observed Prabhupada's 100th anniversary of his appearance with a lotus flower that had different petals. And each petal represented a different aspect of this observance. And there was one petal that dealt with reuniting Srila Prabhupada's family. After Prabhupada left, there was many devotees that left our movement, and there was factionalization. So one of the ways that the Centennial Committee, the International Centennial Committee, observed this, Lokanath Swami was the chairman of this International Centennial Committee. There were different GBCs on the committee and other senior devotees. One way that this was observed was they published two editions of Unity magazine. Okay, and this dealt with reuniting Srila Prabhupada's family. And in the first edition, and in the first article of the first edition, there was an interview of Vyasaki Prabhu, you know, who took his last birth in Bengal and this birth in America. And he's a famous ISKCON musician. And in the 2 years prior to the centennial, Vyasaki traveled all over the world and visited over 500 devotees that had stopped practicing Krishna consciousness and stopped associating with ISKCON. And in the very first paragraph of his interview, he described a common denominator between all of those 500 plus devotees. One is that they still had love and respect for Srila Prabhupada. They had a lot of love and respect for Srila Prabhupada. And two, somehow or other, they were unable to accommodate the aspect of her philosophy which is contained in 10.14.8 of Bhagavatam. Does anybody know what 10.14.8 of Bhagavatam is all about? Huh? Yeah. Tate nukram pam sukshimiksamano bundane vatma kritam vipakam rig vag vapabir vididan namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadaya bhak. One who always seeks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions, understanding that they're coming about as a result of one's past misdeeds, and goes on rendering service with body, mind, and words, always offering obeisances from the core of his heart, that person becomes eligible to enter into pure devotional service. So there's an interesting purport that really connects with this. Okay, this, you know, Prabhupada says on page 91 in Nectar Devotion, and he paraphrases this shloka, the translation. He said, this should be the guide for all devotees. Okay, for good reason. I mean, this world is dukkhaliyam ashashvatam. Anybody notice that? The dukkhaliyam part? This is temporary and it's a place of suffering. Anybody notice that? How many of you have suffered in the last 48 hours? Please raise your hand. Yeah. Okay, so this world is a place of suffering, okay? Now, there's an interesting purport, 1919. Jadarani Mataji, please write this down. It's very significant. 1919 purport. This is in the passing of Bhishmadev, okay? This will help you a lot next time, you know, Krishna lowers the boom on you, okay? Anybody else that's got their notebook out, write it down. 1919. Powerful, okay? In the passing of Bhishmadev, in the purport, Prabhupada describes the different bhavs that Krishna has with his devotees. Okay, like with Jashodamayi, you know, there is this Vatsalya Ras, Vatsalya Bhav, you know, of mother and son. And Arjuna Sakya Ras, deep friendship, you know, very close relationship. And then he describes that the tribulations a devotee undergoes is another transcendental bhav with the Lord. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary says that Krishna puts a devotee in distress to deepen his devotional service. Now, I tell you, it takes good rounds and good morning program attendance to really to understand that this is actually Krishna's loving exchange when I'm in a distressed circumstance. Now that young child is rolling in ecstasy because of morning program attendance. Okay. All right. So I better stop here. I'm going to get in big trouble with the GBC, and the temple president. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Remember, 1919, okay? Significant. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.